It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Back with video, and I got weird settings on the camera, and the facial recognition thing is chasing me all over, and you're seeing that online. So, time out. Sorry about that. We'll just let the drum loop run for a second while I see if I can't correct that. Because that's really annoying as hell, isn't it? Yes. All right, much better, isn't it? I thought so. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you find us on the interweb tubes. That's also, of course, where you go if you'd like to be part of the madcap multimedia real-time wacky zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours while this program is live. Just go over to headon.live and click on chat room. If you've never been there before, pick out a screen name and a password, jump right in. You'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Squeaky and Terry and Saigon. Yes. And, of course, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space today to become Man Cave. Yes. So, good afternoon to the Facebook viewing crowd. Hey, Joseph. Libby in the room. There's Brother Deacon Asa. Joseph. Gaia. William. Michelle. Darren. Thanks for the welcome back. Hey, look, there's Tony. And it's Titanic Tuesday. And, of course, remember, on Titanic Tuesday, we celebrate that kind of right-wing intellectual acuity that says, full speed ahead into the iceberg. We'll show it. We'll ram the iceberg to own the libtards. Yes. It's too cold for space folding today in Northern California. I completely understand. It's warmed all the way up to maybe 35 degrees here. Sunny south my left hind foot. So every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this one is no different. Thank you very kindly to our subscribers for the, what is this? Yes, the 21st day of the month. It's the 21st day of January, 2020. And so thanks go out to Joan in Talibandiana and to our buddy at Shadow Mountain Graphics. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. Where do we stand on fundraising for this evening? Well, in a hole. Remember, we finished the last week before I was off for a week. $295 in the hole. We knocked out all of that except $50. And then yesterday, well, the bottom line is fundraising goals at like $450. And if you'd like to help out on an a la carte basis, we love new subscribers. We got a brand new subscriber last night. That was really cool. But if you'd like to help out on an a la carte basis, just run over to headon.live, click on contribute, and as long as you're not using a VPN or an ad blocker, you shouldn't have any problem with the interface. Okay? So there's that. That takes care of that part of the program. And so now we should be able to get into the business of Titanic Tuesday earnestly and really and for true. I bet I know what a lot of you have been doing today. You've been doing what I've been doing today. And that is watch the sham impeachment cover-up being perpetrated by Midnight Moscow Mitch McConnell in the Senate of the United States and aided and abetted by 52 other Republican cronies. Lick spittles, bootlicks, that sort of thing. And you'll forgive me if I'm still working on getting the whole theater thingy out of my system, because I watched this thing unfold today. It began here at noon Central Time, and a phrase from Shakespeare just kept popping into my head. It is a tale, and I'm talking here about the Republicans. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. That perhaps is a bit over the top in terms of my jadedness and my cynicism, but we really don't have a functioning United States Senate anymore, and that's the way that Moscow Mitch wants it. The Senate has become, as other Senates have in other eras, the Senate has become a craven, obsequious, fawning tool of a deeply disturbed and disordered minded individual in the White House. Of all the things that I was taught as a child, taught to love my country, taught to revere its institutions, it is a sad damned thing to be present to watch it die. And that's what we're watching, make no mistake. As someone who enjoys watching the legal wranglings and so forth, I guess there's a bit of entertainment value. It is abundantly clear that Nitwit Nero's team of pettifoggers and ambulance chasers is not up to the task, and that they are far exceeded in legal talent by the likes of Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler and Zoe Lofgren, Val Demings. But this is one of those situations where talent doesn't matter. Skill doesn't matter. Knowledge doesn't matter. Acumen doesn't matter. Because thanks to Moscow Mitch and his midnight impeachment sham trial, the cover-up, if you will, the only thing that matters is that the fix is in. And it's been in. At least here in our little community, we have known it was in. We knew it going in. We've talked about it a year or more. Because in this little community, we happy few, we stay way, 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 way out front and ahead of the curve. But that doesn't mean, well, how best to analogize it? When someone you love is sick, and they are sick beyond healing, you prepare yourself for what is inevitably to come, because it's just a manifestation of what comes to us all. But even though you know your loved one is sick, it does not change the amount, the degree, or the depth of one's love. And just because you know that an inevitable end is coming and gets nearer with every passing day, when that day comes, it does not in any wise lessen the grief. And I can think about this in real time terms as well. Because last week, while I was away from the mic, a dear friend of mine up in northern Wisconsin went on. His name was Rob Ganson, and he was a magnificent poet. And he was the most, I dare say, the most sublime voice that region has ever had. And he brought the Northwoods to life in his writings in ways that, every poem of his, when he'd publish one, I'd just sit there with, pushed back in the chair. And he had known he was sick, and he had known he was going on, and he had made every preparation for it that he possibly could. And he even talked about his going up to the very end to the extent he possibly could. He even had, the term for it, he had a potlatch of sorts and gave away all the things that he cared about to people he knew would love and cherish them, taking them going forward. And yet, last week, when I saw the news that he had left us, it still felt like a punch in the gut. It hurt. It still hurts. But that was the thing about Rob. Doggone it, he made his poetry a part of everyday life every day. And so I was thinking of him as I was watching this pathetic sham of a transparently obvious scam be played out in chambers that were once thought to be hallowed and a repository of the most sacred of our secular systems. It was as if the patient were laying in the bed, breathing its last, and people like Pat Cipollone and Jay Sekulow came up and worked up a biggin and spat it right in the patient's face. That's today. It's probably going to feel even worse tomorrow. I never anticipated growing up to be present at the end of everything that I was taught was most dear and praiseworthy and honorable about this, my country, our country, the Republic, the Union. I continue to be utterly nonplussed, if not disgusted, by the ongoing use of the phrase our democracy, but longtime listeners to this program know that already and know why. This country is no democracy. This country has never been a democracy. And in a phrase that I alone coined, democracy in the United States of America has ever been far more aspirational than operational. And we have had, we've had 4 hours to bear witness to that today. And there will be hours more, and perhaps as the program continues this evening, we'll check in. Last hour plus has been spent on arguing over a motion, an amendment, it's actually an amendment, presented by Chuck Schumer. And I'm just going to take a minute and say this. When the fate of an institution and a nation rests upon arguments presented by the likes of Chuck Schumer, well, you're fucked. The man has all the force and effect of stale cornbread. I'm sorry, it's just, you know, true. And so we are watching the end of something. And like I said, other Senates have had it happen before. I cannot remember. Oh, here he goes again. He's going to talk about ancient history. I can't recall if it was the Senate at the time that Nero was emperor, or if it was young Germanicus, young Caligula. But I remember reading that after the demise of the emperor, and after years and years and years of people shrieking about how we had to get the Republic back, this not we, I mean, I'm not a Roman, how they had to get the Republic back, with the emperor dead, representatives went back to the Senate and said, okay, we can go back to the way things were. You can be the final word. You can go back to running the Republic, SPQR, Senatus Populusque Romani. And the Senate leadership then said, you know, no. We'll go and find another emperor. We don't want to do the hard work that the ages set forward for us. We would rather sit and snivel and cow and wait for our bellies to be rubbed by whatever madman happens to seize power. And in that moment, the historians of that era tell us, they knew that the idea of the Roman Republic was as dead as a 3-day-old mackerel in the sun. And that's where we are. That's me, Bob Kincaid, little ray of fucking sunshine. That's where we are. This isn't just partisan politics. This is the outright killing of everything that the framers and the founders thought they were putting together. And I have to give kudos to Lawrence O'Donnell for the analysis that he offered on MSNBC last night. I do not have the clip. I can paraphrase fairly well. Lawrence O'Donnell pointed out that the Senate trial that was anticipated by the framers and the founders is obviously not the Senate trial that is taking place today. And why that is. Because the Senate as it was envisioned, and we don't think about this that much. The Senate as it was envisioned by the framers was an intensely independent body. And in fact, long before Lawrence O'Donnell was talking about this last night, we were talking about it here. But the Senate, under the original vision of the Constitution as ratified in 1787, was seen to be an independent, calm, cool, and insulated body. They did not stand for election. Senators were appointed by the various state legislatures. They served a longer term than the House, 4 years longer per term, 6 years. And they were free, at least in theory, they were free to be guided by their conscience and what they perceived to be the best interests of the country. Now, it did not work out that way in practice. But by 1804, with Judge Pickering, they had already had their first impeachment proceeding presided over, you might be interested to know, and I think I've mentioned before, by the American Satan. The man vilified to this day by the likes of Lin-Manuel Miranda, Aaron Burr, as sitting as president of the Senate because he was vice president under Jefferson. And he was roundly said to have presided over a process that was fair, that was a search for truth, a search for facts, and was not in any wise tainted by partisan politics. So ponder that. Again, Aaron Burr is presented to us as the fallen angel among the founders. He is cast as downright Luciferian. And yet, when it came right down to it, Aaron Burr ran a more fair, more transparent, more effective impeachment trial than did Addison McConnell of Sheffield, Alabama, not Kentucky. Taken in that light, it's rather breathtaking, isn't it? So I imagine at this point in time, and the way it's been working is Schumer presents a hopeless amendment. And the first one, and then Midnight Moscow Mitch gets up and says, Mr. Chief Justice, I request unanimous consent for a brief recess of 15 minutes of the proceedings, after which I will come back
and present a motion to table the amendment.
And then the recess is granted. And the recess is not for him to give relief to his aged prostate, but rather for him to make sure that he's still got his entire caucus on board. Because they have to maintain the fiction that there are two or three Republican senators out there who, might break with the rest of the maggots. So, for instance, it was all over the place earlier. Chinless Mitch has had to change the rules. And, these are big changes to the impeachment rules that were overnight. Because we went from 2 days to 3 days. Oh, my goodness gracious, six lives. And all day long, every time they've taken a break, I confess I've been watching MSNBC. Can you imagine watching this charade on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda? I'd be into my second bottle of tequila and already burned up the first swirly straw in the first bottle.
Well,
and so. It's been it's culturally wrong for me to say kabuki theater or whatever, but whatever analogy we use and mean when we say that something is presented and as a sham and everybody knows it's a sham, nobody could even be remotely expected to think it's a reflection of reality. Well, that's what this is. And the multimillionaires of the for-profit media were all about, my goodness, this must mean that noted Republican moderate Susan Collins is giving Mitch McConnell what for? Well, guess what? They had the vote on the motion to table the witness amendment. And when they ran through the roll call, she practically whispered her vote of aye on the motion to table. And so the motion to guarantee witnesses, the amendment to guarantee witnesses, went down 53-47, because that's exactly how many Republicans there are on one side and how many Democrats and independents there are on the other. And so she walked to the microphone and said, "Aye." I don't even think she walked to the microphone. And like I said earlier on, the lawyering is just awful on Nitwit Nero's side. It's almost as though they're working from a script that he scrawled with a crayon after having knocked down those Big Macs and a filet of fish and a Giganto Diet Coke. He, meanwhile, I don't know if you noticed this, is over at that gathering of swells in Davos, Switzerland, where earlier today he was slurring for all he was worth. It has become impossible with him to get the dosage right. But over there among that gathering of swells, somebody decided that they wanted to invite young Greta Thunberg to speak. And speak she did. She made more sense in a short period of time than did Nitwit Nero, as he complained that impeachment is a hoax, it's a hoax. I mean, hear for yourself.
...to Davos and told you that our house is on fire. I said I wanted you to panic. I've been warned that telling people to panic about the climate crisis is a very dangerous thing to do. But don't worry, it's fine. Trust me, I've done this before, and I can assure you it doesn't lead to anything. We are not telling you to keep...
Damn. Don't worry. I mean, I told you to panic, but nothing's going to happen. I've been here before. I've told you these things before, and you don't do anything. Nothing's going to happen. As a rhetorical device, sometimes it's good to do that. Sometimes it's not so good. I don't think she made the wrong choice here.
Talking about reaching net zero emissions or carbon neutrality by cheating and fiddling around with numbers. We're not telling you to offset your emissions by just paying someone else to plant trees in places like Africa, while at the same time forests like the Amazon are being slaughtered at an infinitely higher rate. And let's be clear, we don't need a low-carbon economy. We don't need to lower emissions. Our emissions have to stop if we are to have a chance to stay below the 1.5-degree target. And until we have the technologies that at scale can put our emissions to minus, then we must forget about net zero. We need real zero.
That's actually worth pondering. Net zero means nothing. Real zero means everything. And as I have said on this program before, most people have no idea. If you sit down and start thinking what a zero emissions world looks and feels and sounds and smells and tastes like, you will come away from that contemplation terrified. But that's what we're talking about in terms of saving the ability of this species to continue to live on this planet. Now, that is not an opinion that is shared broadly. Because, among other things, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, recently declared that the human species will be around for hundreds of millions of years. That's a quote. Not tens, but hundreds of millions of years. Yeah. And probably just like we are now, because evolution, of course, is just like the climate emergency, probably a cruel Chinese hoax. And Charles Darwin was secretly a Chinese communist who came back from the future to poison Western Europe's past by feeding us a fraud about how evolution changes people over time. God, I hate what the last 3 years have done to my imagination. But Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, thinks that I'm rich, I'm comfortably well off, I'm socially secure. He thinks is probably the wrong word. He believes that human beings are going to be around for hundreds of millions of years when you can't even say that about most dinosaurs. And they were, you know, just when you get right down to measuring, they were more successful as a species on this planet than we have been. just in terms of longevity.
But Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, suggested that we need some billionaires to put together a $10 million prize for the first genius, super genius. Everything comes back to a Warner Brothers cartoon reference sooner or later, doesn't it? He wants a genius prize for the first person who can create a living thing that will consume methane and fart oxygen. The plant, a molecule, something. And he wants to launch it, he said, at the Saturnine moon Titan. You know, it's a dangerous thing to let idiots read speculative fiction, parody, satire. And I don't know when it was that, I don't know, maybe he was sitting there on the banks of that creek in Texas, honking away on Aqua Buddha one day with a paperback copy of Kurt Vonnegut's Sirens of Titan. And the stupid bastard thinks it's possible. Jesus. Hundreds of millions of years, Brother Deacon Asa says, I've taken one for the team, done the research, Bob. The average mammal species sticks around this blue marble for around 2 million years, unless, of course, you're born with a dead animal on top of your head, and then all bets are off. Yeah, cowbell. Oh, I know. So, no. But, or maybe it's not Sirens of Titan. I anticipate an email from our buddy Ron in Raleigh any moment now saying, no, Bob, you dumbass. He's been watching The Expanse. And that's a possibility, too. But he is emblematic of the bad thinking, the poor cognition of which we are capable in this country. Don't worry. Rand Paul started those remarks by saying, despite the scare tactics of the climate change, whatever he called us. Well, human beings are going to be around for hundreds of millions of years. And so, no. But we can judge for ourselves who's more intelligent, Rand Paul and that thing on his head, or Greta Thunberg. And then again, I don't want to be too hard on Rand Paul, because maybe this is sequelae from that ass beating that he took, which he so richly deserved. Stupid fucker can't even manage his own backyard, and he thinks he wants to alter the chemical composition of a moon flying around the planet Saturn.
Because distant net zero emission targets will mean absolutely nothing if we just continue to ignore the carbon dioxide budget that applies for today, not distant future dates. The fact that the USA is leaving the Paris Accord seemed to outrage and worry everyone. And it should. But the fact that we are all about to fail the commitments you signed up for in the Paris Agreement doesn't seem to bother the people in power even the least. any plan or policy of yours that doesn't include radical emission cuts at the source starting today is completely insufficient for meeting the 1.5 or well below 2-degree commitments of the Paris Agreement. We couldn't care less about your party politics. From a sustainability perspective, the right, the left, as well as the center have all failed. No political ideology or economic structure.
That's a brilliant statement. Just as the old myth says, you know, well, after the elephant standing on the turtle, what's the turtle stand on? Turtle's all the way down. It's failure all the way down. We did not get here by ourselves. There were a lot of people who were more than willing, and okay, so maybe we forgive them for their ignorance, but we know now. But once upon a time, there were people who thought we could just consume, and that we could consume everything, and yet somehow or another, we would replenish the stuff that needed to be consumed. But you know what? There aren't any little grease-covered Keebler elves down under the earth making more coal, making more oil, making more gas. And God knows if there were, we would only be hastening our own demise. Because the planet can't stand it. That's why the planetary system itself developed the ability to sequester carbon and bury it deep within the earth. Because that's what coal and oil and gas are. Oh, there's Ron and Raleigh. I was right. Ron says, that's right, Bob. We need a proto-molecule like on the expanse. Rand Paul and others like him are the last best hope of mankind. ... We are so done, says Ron. And, you know, this is not the condemned eight heartily. This is a matter of trying to have enough gumption to recognize where we are and if there is any way to save us, start yesterday on it. And so this sham taking place in the Senate today is simply an embarrassment. Among other things, one of the things that it makes abundantly clear is that, and we've talked about this on the program a lot, our failure in this country to meaningfully teach civics and what it means to be a free citizen of this country and how the government works and what the Constitution means when it in what it says. And it's not just that we out here, we hoi polloi, we lumpen proletariat, don't have a very good handle on civics. What I'm finding out today, watching this sham impeachment cover up, is that apparently the members of the Senate of the United States of America are woefully inadequately prepared in terms of understanding what the Constitution means, what it requires when it talks about impeachment, or anything else for that matter. And, of course, there is the new allegations in that book Washington Post, Philip Rucker, and I can't remember the woman's name. But it's that new book. It was out today. Oh, that's an unpaid product placement. Hey, fundraising goal for the Horn today is $450. Just a reminder. While the authors of A Very Stable Genius rake in the cash, we're just trying to keep things going a little bit at a time. But one of the stories that they recount is that I guess it was 2017 when some documentary producers. Everybody got together in the blue room at the White House and Nitwit Nero was going to read some Constitution, and Mike Pompeo was going to read some, God, maybe it wasn't Pompeo, I don't know who, but Mike Pencilneck Geek was going to read some Constitution. And so the relatively new president of the United States, Tangerine Tiberius, couldn't get through reading a simple clause of the Constitution without fumbling and stumbling. And he became angry and frustrated and pissy. And he complained that, get this, he's president of the United States. Just set the scene. The president of the United States complained that the language of the Constitution of the United States, English, was like a foreign language. It's like a foreign language. It's not. Now, it does happen to be written in the style of the time, and not just the style. It's written by lawyers, okay? It's written by lawyers. And what lawyers try to do when they write is to make sure that any alternative interpretations of what they're writing are gone, that they are absolutely clear in what they are trying to convey. And that's what you get in the Constitution. And there are some sort of philosophical ellipses in the Constitution where you can tell that the framers were like, no, we don't have to go into that any more deeply. I mean, any idiot could. Because whatever they foresaw, they did not foresee the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I mean, they kind of did, because they provided for impeachment. And the impeachment would be tried by a bunch of senators who didn't have to face the voters, who were free to vote their consciences, who were free to examine the evidence and come to a conclusion without fear or favor. Well, that's all over now. That's gone. And so instead, what we have is what's been going on today, what will go on tomorrow. And this is the goal, remember, for the Republicans. They want this all over before February the 4th, so that venereal Vespasian can spend the entirety of his State of the Union speech taking a victory lap and spiking the ball in the end zone. That's what's behind this. A couple of emails. Kyle in Kentucky, Stan, thank you for calling it as it is. We are witnessing the end of everything that our country claimed to be but never was. And now the Republicans are being more transparent about it this time. Albert in Rhode Island says, what happened to the podcast from last night? It was not posted last night. Yes, it was. I checked the White Rose website. It's not there. No, I mean, I know others who got it, and I know I posted it, but there are problems at White Rose Society. It's timing out, and I haven't heard back from Ben. So, as usual, the standard disclaimer applies. If you want the podcast, if you want to listen live, please use headon.live because it seems to be stable. Instead of sham, Stephen New York says, dog and pony show. Yeah, but even those can be enjoyable. That's why they have them. Steve adding, at least stale cornbread can be somewhat resurrected with steam. Schumer is the consummate overcooked pasta. It's just a pile of mush, and there's nothing you can do with it but throw it away. Why? I mean, this is two in a row now. Why is it that the Democrats let such uniformly awful senators lead their caucus. I mean, Harry Reid was awful. He was terrible. Dude was a former Golden Gloves boxer, and he still got, I mean, Mitch McConnell slapped him around like he owed him money. And Schumer. Ugh. I mean, we desperately need to take the majority in the Senate. But then somebody needs to challenge Schumer, because I do not hold Chuck Schumer in the same esteem that I hold Nancy Pelosi. She's a street fighter. He's not. He doesn't have the cold-bloodedness for the task. So that's just a kind of a beginning place. I really should probably let's see it. Let's just check in from time to time on the impeachment proceedings. Man, it's rough when a 16-year-old girl from Sweden makes more sense than a bunch of highly paid panjandrums, 53 of them in the Senate of the United States. This should be good. This is Val Demings.
Was received. We do not know whether or how the State Department responded. Nor.
And by the way, just for clarity, what we're hearing, this is argument over an amendment to subpoena documents and witnesses from the State Department. And after this, I think we'll probably do the Department of Energy next. And this is going to go on. This is going to go on into the dark and still of the night, because that's how that most un-American of senators, Moscow Mitch, wants this done. He's scared to death for the people, for the American people to actually see this, because the numbers are turning on him. 51% of the United States, people of the United States, want Nitwit Nero removed from office. North of 60% now say they want witnesses and they know that what he did was wrong. And what gets even stranger is that now, I saw this alert come across just a little bit ago. Let me check real quick. What it boils down to is more people in Republican states want witnesses and a real trial than do not. That's red states. That ain't California. That's not Massachusetts or Minnesota or no. It's places like here. And that has got to render Addison McConnell's bowels downright watery. Ugh. So anyway, the argument is over the amendment to call witnesses, and I'd like to hear from Val Demings for a little bit.
The fourth category of documents that the Senate should subpoena are contemporaneous first-person accounts from State Department officials who were caught up in President Trump's corrupt scheme. These documents, which were described in detail by Deputy Assistant Secretary Kent, Ambassador Taylor, and political officer David Holmes, would help complete the record and clarify how the president's scheme unfolded in real time and how the Ukrainians reacted. Mr. Kent wrote notes or memos to file at least four times, according to his testimony. Ambassador Taylor took extensive notes of nearly every conversation he had, some in a little notebook. And David Holmes, the embassy official in Ukraine, was a consistent note taker of important meetings with Ukrainian officials.
Did you take notes of this conversation on September 1st with Ambassador Sondland?
I did.
And did you take notes related to most of the conversations, if not all of them, that you recited in your opening statement?
All of them, Mr. Goldman.
And you are aware, I presume, that the State Department has not provided those notes to the committee, is that right?
I am aware.
So we don't have the benefit of reviewing them to ask you these questions?
Correct. I understand that they may be coming sooner or later.
Well, we would welcome that.
The State Department never produced those notes. As another example, Deputy Assistant Secretary Kent testified about a key document that he drafted on August 16th describing his concerns that the Trump administration was attempting to pressure Ukraine into opening politically motivated investigations.
I'd like to start with you, Mr. Kent. In your testimony, you said that you had, in mid-August, it became clear to me that Giuliani's efforts to gin up politically motivated investigations were now infecting U.S. engagement with Ukraine, leveraging President Zelensky's desire for a White House meeting. Mr. Kent, did you actually write a memo documenting your concerns that there was an effort underway to pressure Ukraine to open an investigation to benefit President Trump?
Yes, ma'am. I wrote a memo to the file on August 16th.
But we don't have access to that memo, do we?
I submitted it to the State Department subject to the September 27th subpoena.
And we have not received one piece of paper from the State Department relative to this investigation.
Deputy Assistant Secretary Kent also memorialized a September 15 conversation at which Ambassador Taylor described a Ukrainian official accusing America of hypocrisy for advising President Zelensky against investigating a prior Ukrainian president. Mr. Kent described that conversation during his testimony. He said, but the more awkward part of the conversation came after Special Representative Volker made the point that the Ukrainians, who had opened their authorities under President Zelensky, had opened investigations of former President Poroshenko. He didn't think that was appropriate. And then Andrei Yermak said, what? You mean the type of investigations you're pushing for us to do on Biden and Clinton? The conversation makes clear the Ukrainian officials understood the corrupt nature of President Trump's requests, and therefore doubted American credibility on anti-corruption measures. Records of these conversations and other notes and memoranda by senior American officials in Ukraine would flesh out and help complete the record for the first article of impeachment. They would tell the whole truth and to the American people and to this body. You should require the State Department to provide them. To summarize, the Senate should issue the subpoena proposed in the amendment requiring the State Department to turn over relevant texts and WhatsApp messages, emails, diplomatic cables, and notes. These documents bear directly on the trial of this body, the trial that this body is required by the Constitution to hold. They are immediately relevant to the first article of impeachment. Their existence has been attested to by credible witnesses in the House. And the only reason we don't already have them is that the president has ordered his administration, including Secretary Pompeo, to hide them. The president's lawyers may suggest that the House should sought at, that the House should have sought these materials in court or awaited further lawsuits under the Freedom of Information Act, aka FOIA lawsuits. Any such suggestion is meritless. To start, the Constitution has never been understood to require such lawsuits, which has never occurred. It's never occurred in any previous impeachment. Moreover, the president has repeated.
As she continues with her argument, one thing is noteworthy about this particular amendment that's under discussion. This one's going to be a little, well, let me preface this. If any of the Republicans hearing and considering this amendment actually cared about the United States of America, and they don't, this particular amendment would be hard to vote against because the amendment specifically references in its request for documentation any communications regarding threats on the life or well-being of Marie Yovanovitch. Because another thing that happened while I was gone, because I can't leave this program, was that we found out that there was a mob hit put out on Marie Yovanovitch, and that is why she was extracted from Ukraine, which with such profound alacrity, as in, never mind, pack a bag, get on the plane now. I mean, dark and still of the night stuff, just like, you know, just like this impeachment sham. They had found out that her life was at hazard, and that, in fact, she was being surveilled by a group of killers. And by the time all is said and done, we will probably find out that the group of killers were acting on orders that came straight from the White House. Even Nixon didn't do anything like that. He just had an enemies list and thought it might be nice if something awful would happen to Jack Anderson. But when the Republicans vote against this amendment, and they will do so in yet another motion to table, well, then they will be voting that yes, in fact, it's okay to hide threats against an ambassador in a dangerous foreign country. Mm-hmm. That's who they are. That's what they'll be doing. But let us also take a moment and consider some things that are happening outside this phony baloney proceeding. A bombshell report issued earlier this afternoon, not very long before airtime at all, regarding the fact that we now know that Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Bonesaw, his phone was used to hack the phone of Jeff Bezos. Now, phone hacking has been rather of a big thing for a while now, going all the way back to the phone hacking scandal in the UK. And so Jeff Bezos was communicating with Mohammed bin Bonesaw on WhatsApp. And Mohammed bin Bonesaw's phone, presumably operated either by Mohammed bin Bonesaw or someone at the direction of Mohammed bin Bonesaw, sent a video file which, for reasons known but to God, Jeff Bezos opened. And he did not know it at the time, but that opened all sorts of security nightmares, and he got the living daylights hacked out of his phone. Again, The Guardian broke the story today, reporting that it was 2018. He got a WhatsApp message sent from the personal account of Mohammed bin Bonesaw, and the malicious file infiltrated the phone, and it was all discovered by as a result of digital forensic analysis. Well, over at Bloomberg News, Justin Sink, who is their White House correspondent, then said, "This invites the obvious question of if MBS has ever sent certain senior members of the White House video messages via WhatsApp." Think about it. That's when Ryan Grimm at The Intercept chimed in and said, "As we previously reported, Jared Kushner chatted regularly with MBS on WhatsApp. It is near certain that MBS pulled this same hack on Kushner, and Saudi has therefore had secret access to his phone for years." Ryan Grimm then went on to note, "Of course, Jared Kushner could not get a security clearance until Donald Trump pushed it through, regardless of his obvious security problems." And most intriguingly, Ryan Grimm linked to a 2018 story. The headline of that story read, "Saudi Crown Prince boasted that Jared Kushner was in his pocket." How about that? I wonder how many people have Jared Kushner and Precious Princess Iwanka, my daddy Trump, and, well, Nitwit Nero himself in their pocket. Shit. Assuming that he didn't just straight up tell him, Pootie probably knew about the assassination attempt on, or the assassination perpetrated against Qasem Soleimani even before Trump's guests at Mar-a-Lago knew about it, and Trump's guests at Mar-a-Lago knew about it before the United States knew about it, before Nancy Pelosi knew about it, before anybody in the Gang of Eight knew about it. As our buddy Scott from San Diego puts it, "We're all screwed, Bob." Yeah, here we are, two days back after a week away, and I am just, I am emitting sunshine. I'm surprised that the image is even visible on Facebook. The sunshine is so bright. Near certain that the Saudis have hacked Jared, who's such a genius. Damn. And by the way, in the hack of Bezos, they got what the Saudis got, what were described as large amounts of data. And yet, gentle reminder, the Saudis are our, where's my reverb when I need it, partners in peace. And I will say again that the mere presence of the Saudis in our geopolitical relationship is sufficient reason for us to treat reaching zero carbon emissions with all the gravity that we would treat the arrival of plague. Because, in fact, our relationship with those petrostates is and has been, from almost the very beginning, a plague upon our house. Dare to imagine a United States that needs no oil, that needs no anything from those bloodthirsty barbarians who rule the Arabian Peninsula. Imagine how freeing that would be. Imagine what a glorious day it would be to no longer need those thugs. And make no mistake, the royal house of Ibn Saud is a gang of thugs. They're horrible. And they make a mockery of everything that we suppose to believe we are or should be. Jesus. Oh dear. Jay Sekulow, Hustler and Ambulance Chaser, is just wrapping up at the podium. Well, lucky us. That must have been 5 minutes of absolute 200-proof, unmitigated pettifog and stupidity. And here comes Adam Schiff.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Let me just respond to some of my colleagues' points, if I can. First, counsel said, well, the House would like to call John Bolton, but the House did not seek his testimony during its investigation. Well, first of all, we did. We invited John Bolton to testify, and you know what he told us? I'm not coming, and if you subpoena me, I will sue you. That was his answer. I will sue you. Mr. Bolton is represented by the same lawyer who represents Dr. Kupperman, who actually did sue us when he was subpoenaed. So we knew that John Bolton would make good on that threat. Now, Mr. Sekulow says something about lawyer lawsuits. Now, I have to confess I wasn't completely following the argument, but something about lawyer lawsuits, that we are against lawyer lawsuits. Well, I don't know what that means, but I can tell you this. The Trump Justice Department is in court in that case and in other cases arguing Congress cannot go to court to enforce its subpoenas. So when they say something about lawyer lawsuits and they say there's nothing wrong with the House suing to get these witnesses to show up and they should have sued to get them to show up, their own other lawyers are in court saying the House has no such right. They're in court saying you can't have lawyer lawsuits. So that argument cannot be made in both directions. What's more, in the Kupperman litigation, in the McGahn litigation, which tested the same bogus theory of absolute immunity, in that lawsuit, once again, involving the president's lawyer, Don McGahn, the one who was told to fire the special counsel and then to lie about it, that lawsuit, to get his testimony. Judge Jackson ruled on that very recently when they made the same bogus claim. He's absolutely immune from showing up. And the judge says that's nonsense. There's no support for that, none in the Constitution, none in the case law. That is made out of whole cloth. But, you know, the judge said something more that was very interesting. Because what we urge John Bolton's lawyer is, you don't need to file a lawsuit. Dr. Kupperman, you don't need to file a lawsuit. There's one already filed involving Don McGahn that's about to be decided. So unless your real purpose here is delay, unless your real purpose here is to avoid testimony and you just wish to give the impression of a willingness to come forward, you just want to have the court's blessing, if that's really true, agree to be bound by the McGahn decision. Well, of course they were not willing. because they didn't want to testify. Now, for whatever reason, John Bolton is now willing to testify. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because he has a book coming out. Maybe it's because it will be very hard to explain why he was unwilling to share important information with the Senate, that he couldn't show up for a House deposition or interview because he would need court permission to do it, but he can put it in a book. I don't know. I can't speak to his motivation. But I can tell you he's willing to come now, if you're willing to hear him. But, of course, they weren't willing to be bound by that court decision in McGahn. But the court said something very interesting, because one of the arguments they had been making, one of the arguments that John Bolton's lawyer had been making as to why they needed their own separate litigation was, well, John Bolton and Dr. Kupperman, they're national security people, and Don McGahn is just the White House counsel. No offense to the White House counsel, but apparently you have nothing to do with national security. And so they couldn't be bound by what the court in the McGahn case said. Well, the judge in the McGahn case said, this applies to national security stuff too. So we do have a court decision, and what's
some of this makes me sad, because Adam Schiff and the House team are putting forward cogent, well-reasoned, step-by-step arguments. The kind of stuff that makes law professors proud of their students, and logic professors proud of their students. And he could just as well be up there playing a kazoo, because it doesn't matter. This is again, I can't get Shakespeare off my mind. This is a dumb show for the groundlings. The only Adam Schiff is under no illusions. He knows that every last one of those godforsaken Republicans are going to put their party, their political well-being, their futures as multimillionaire lobbyists whenever they get around to leaving the Senate, they're going to put all of that ahead of the Constitution to which they swore an oath. And that is grievous, pathetic. And yes, tragically sad. Meanwhile, Jay Sekulow or Pat Cipollone or I think Pam Bondi's sitting over there. You remember her. She was the Florida Attorney General when Trump paid her off to keep her from joining in the Trump University litigation, that Pam Bondi. Any one of those can walk up to the podium and pick their nose and flick it at the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. And that will be deemed sufficient argument to support Republicans voting to table this amendment that seeks, among other things, proof, documentary and testimonial proof of a murder-for-hire scheme against a sworn ambassador of the United States of America. That chills me to my bones. It would chill me in July just as it chills me in this frigid January. Because what it implies about the Republicans in the Senate and what it says about what they think about our institutions, about their own multiple oaths now to the Constitution of the United States, and about this little experiment in a republic if, as Benjamin Franklin said, we can keep it. And his query
now appears to be rapidly moving toward being answered in the negative. A republic, if you can keep it. It doesn't like we're going, doesn't look like we're going to keep it. And what's more, somewhere around a third of the eligible voters in the United States do not wish to keep it. They wish only to worship a venal, ignorant, sexual predator sitting in the White House. And that's as much a definition of tragedy as the end of any play by Shakespeare, Euripides, or Sophocles.
In this case, it equals guilt. Now, you're going to have 16 hours to ask questions. You're going to have 16 hours. That's a long time to ask questions. Wouldn't you like to be able to ask about the documents in that 16 hours? Would you like to be able to say, counsel for the president, what did Mick Mulvaney mean when he emailed so-and-so and said such-and-such? What's your explanation for that? Because that seems to be pretty damning evidence of exactly what the House is saying here. What's your explanation of that, Mr. Sekulow? What's your explanation? Wouldn't you like to be able to ask about the documents?
And as far as Republicans are concerned, the answer is fuck no, we don't ask any of them kind of questions. Shit. We got maggots in our district, and they're liable to blow our fucking brains out if we vote against Trump. That's what we're scared of.
I think you would. I think you should. But the backwards way this resolution is drafted, you get 16 hours to ask questions about documents you've never seen. And then you know what's more? If you do decide at that point after the trial is essentially over that you do want to see the documents after all, and the documents are produced, you don't get another 16 hours. You don't get 16 minutes. You don't get 16 seconds to ask about those documents. Does that make any sense to you? Does that make any sense at all? I'll tell you something I'd like to know that may be in the documents. You probably heard about, you hear more about the three amigos. My colleagues mentioned two of the three amigos, Amigo Volcker and Amigo Sondland. These are two of the three people that the president put in charge of Ukraine policy. The third amigo is Secretary Rick Perry, the former Secretary of Energy. Well, surprisingly, we didn't get those either. But any communication between the Department of Energy and the Department of State is covered by this amendment. Wouldn't you like to know? Don't you think the American people have a right to know what the third amigo knew about this scheme? I'd like to know. I think you should be able to ask questions about it in your 16 hours. At the end of the day, I guess I'll finish with something Mr. Sekulow said. He said, this was a dangerous moment because we're trying to rush through this somehow. It is a dangerous moment, but we're not trying to rush through this trial. We're actually trying to have a real trial here. It's the president that's trying to rush through this. And I have to tell you that whatever you decide here, maybe this is wasted breath and maybe it's already decided, but whatever you decide here, I don't know who the next president is going to be. Maybe it'll be someone in this chamber. But I guarantee you this, whoever that next president is, whether they did something right or they did something wrong, there's going to come a time where you and this body are going to want to subpoena that president and that administration. You're going to want to get to the bottom of serious allegations. Are you prepared to say that that president can simply say, I'm going to fight all subpoenas? Are you prepared to say and accept that president saying, I have absolute immunity, you want me to come testify?
Of course not, because if it's a Democratic president and a Republican House or a Republican Senate, they will subpoena, they will impeach, and they will do whatever they want to do, because there's a rule out there. It's every bit as immutable as the second law of thermodynamics or Boyle's gas laws or anything Newton came up with, and it's this. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It applies to what Trump has done. Trump could go out on the White House lawn and set fire to 1,000 American flags, and every maggot in the country would go out and buy flags and gasoline and start burning American flags with him and say, it's okay, Trump did it. Conversely, if a Republican Congress wants to impeach, investigate, they will do so until hell has frozen solid. Not just over, but solid. And they will shriek that the Constitution is being trashed. But only if they are aggrieved about the actions of a Democrat. Because that is who they are. Plain and simple. We've already had abundant proof of the fact that what Donald Trump said was true. He could murder somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and he wouldn't lose a vote. Not among the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals. No, he would not. Not among the people who wear the stupid hat. Not among the people who say, he's making America great again. Oh, no. Oh, no. Because this is performance art. This is cheap, bad theater. This is an ugly imitation of what this country was supposed to be. And you have a collective group of Republicans who are willing to, leaping on one sword is one thing if one sword is razor sharp and pointy. It's another thing to leap upon one sword when it's dull and rounded at the end and you got to really work it in. And that's what these Republican senators are willing to do, because they think the maggots will have their back. And will reward them. Whereas they are also terrified that should they actually stand up for the Constitution, the maggots will start shooting. And that's why, like I said, that's why the Enzies and the Alexanders and the Roberts, these institutionalist so-called Republican senators, will do whatever Mitch McConnell tells them to do. Because they live in fear of what the voters gunned up as all get out back home will do. That's what yesterday was about in Richmond. It wasn't just a bunch of white racists with guns trying to erase the memory and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It had zero to do with the Second Amendment. It had everything to do with reminding
senators on the eve of an impeachment trial. That they, the maggots, are locked and loaded. And that they hold the betrayers, which is how they would see anyone who votes alongside the Constitution in this sham of a trial. That's how they see them. They hate a betrayer more than they hate what they consider to be their enemy, which is their fellow Americans who don't go along with the idea of turning this country into a fascist nightmare, which is where we're headed, if we're not already there. And don't think that every one of these Republican senators isn't well aware of it. Joni Ernst in Iowa, please. Martha McSally in Arizona. Lamar Alexander's probably not, I don't know, maybe he'll go be a lobbyist in Washington, D.C., but if he wants to go home to Tennistan, well, by God, he knows what's waiting for him if he doesn't toe the fucking mark. For Julius Geezer. I don't know if you caught it or not, but a lot of the people who showed up in Richmond yesterday were referring to this being yesterday being the beginning of what they call the boogaloo. That's white supremacist talk for a civil war based on race. It's code. The coming boogaloo. Sickening, isn't it? A note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. You can see that Schiff is excited and enjoying his role as the lead impeachment manager in the Senate trial here. He loves the challenge of being a prosecutor, which is a good thing. It means he's going to give it his all. Too bad he's arguing before a body dominated by idiots, grifters, and money grubbers who will sacrifice our Constitution and Republic for a pathetic, syphilitic-ridden World Wrestling Federation wrestler wannabe who wouldn't think twice but to throw all of his sycophants under the bus without a second thought. Hear, hear, Darlene. It's where we are. It is simply where we are. Meanwhile, Kyle in Kentucky, Stan. Yep, these white race warrior fuckers are ready to kill for the Grand Dragon. We're in trouble, and we need to realize this is reality. It is sobering, to say the very least. Meanwhile, Lady B says, subject line, all the young rubes. Oh, that's good. All the young rubes. That little gun show beauty pageant that they had the other day, the rubes thought it was a way to show they were fighting for what they feel is their constitutional right. But it also served as a warning. The rubes wanted to let their officials know that not only should you not fuck with their guns, they don't fuck with our way of life. We like it that he's sticking it to the Browns, the Muslims, the disenfranchised. The guns are essential to making you understand that. The rubes say, you better make sure Trump keeps his place in office, not because he's smart. We know he's dumb as fuck. Might even acknowledge that he's a sexual predator, but he's letting us live our lives exactly the way we feel we should. He's showing other people that might read white is right. We're tired of being secondary citizens to other people's needs. Trump is putting America, a.k.a. white people, first, and that is how we like it. This has always been there, Lady B notes. This hatred has been there since the Civil War. We should have nipped it in the bud like Germany did, or at least tried to, in the aftermath of the Second World War. Only now is America understanding just how twisted we are. And indeed we are. So here we are at a little over the halfway point of the program. We are in a $450 hole. That means that we still have $50 to make up from 2 weeks ago.
and $200 from yesterday and today. I'm sorry to say that we are still at zero for the day. And that's, you know, that's tough. Damn, hold on. Okay, there's the problem. Okay, now, step one. Mute those damnable speakers. Okay, good. But yeah, we're at 450, and like I said, I know I'm probably going to have to buy a new streaming machine when I get home. I'm leaving for home again. A reminder: leaving for home on Saturday. And I haven't talked to Steve from Georgia Stan in a very long time. Hey, Steve. Whoop. Yeah, that's the right button. You there? Okay. Don't go anywhere, Steve.
Okay. I'm sure they'll have more to
say about the evidence eventually. Okay, there you are. You got some kind of... Is that you running audio in the background, or is that me?
Yeah, it is. Let me kill this, brother. I apologize.
That's all right. Just I'm easily confused these days.
Yeah, me too, man. So did you have a good time with your production, or...
Oh, it was magnificent, and I'm still trying to get over it.
Yeah. It sucks when you got to return to reality, doesn't it?
Well, it's just it's all the energy that goes into it, and then it all just turns off, and then you're
do that again.
Yeah.
That's good. So did I hear you right? You're skedaddling again on Saturday, or?
Yeah, I'm finally going home. Sunday.
Oh, okay. So you're still.
Yeah, I'm still down here.
Nice.
Because if I'd started packing up and stuff, we wouldn't have had shows this week.
Nice.
Because well, I don't know, it's going to be a hot mess when I get home, because I know I've got one computer to replace at the very least. So if I can get all the way home on Saturday and don't get like waylaid by a blizzard or something,
who knows? Man.
Then I've got all day Sunday.
God,
to solve technical nightmares in the Fabulous Horn Studio at the Magnificent Kincaid Mansion.
The cat. It's all about the cat.
It's not about the cat, Steve. It's not about the cat. The cats, I'm told, will be happy to see me.
Well, I'm sure they will, but they do like a way of dancing on your mixing board that will just...
Now, Agnes has done a pretty good job of keeping them out of there. It's just that something's died in the streaming computer, and I know you know what this misery is like. You know, it might be the power supply. So, okay, you run across the river. You spend 3 hours of your life. You buy a new power supply. You bring it back. You replace the power supply. No, it's not the power supply. Okay, so maybe it's the, maybe it's the solid state drive. Okay, so you pull that out. You go across the river. You buy one of those. Or they don't have one, so you got to order it in. And no, it's not that. Okay, maybe it's the CPU. How about what if it's the RAM? And so instead of sitting there, I just, you know, I know I'm going to wind up buying a new damn computer.
Ouch. Sting, ouch, sting, ouch.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So that's why when we get to like 450, I'm like,
oh, hell. All right, we'll get you through this, man. Keep the faith, man.
I always do.
And it always seems to work out, too.
Yeah, it does. And so anyway, I talked to Agnes and she said, yeah, you're doing the right thing. So this week I'm doing doing one last week of programs from here, and I'll have just about everything stuffed in the car by time for Friday on the front porch on Friday. And then the last thing I'll do is tear down all of this and, hell, I don't know. I may just leave out of here on Friday night after the program's over and get a few hours up the road and knock off in a motel somewhere.
There you go. Hopefully you can find a decent hotel, you know, no flea drop in or anything, you know.
Well, that would be helpful. I try not to. Well, most of the time I stay with Choice because I've got points.
Nice. And yeah, and they don't have a reputation of bed bugs or any of that shit.
Everybody's got them at one point in time, but that's Quality and Clarion and Comfort Suites and stuff like that. And they're when you're just traveling like that, it's not even a big deal. You just want a place to lay your head and get up the next morning, get a shower, and get out the door.
Sure. And even the high-dollar places in New York, they have them, too.
No. Yeah.
But I didn't want to keep you long, Bob. I just got a quick question for you, and then I'm going to blast on out of here.
Okay.
This is something that's been nagging at me. Do you think this is all revenge, the way Mitch is playing this, and just really bending this over for the Clinton debacle?
No, I mean, they had their way on the Clinton debacle. This can't be revenge because they got their way.
Yeah, but Clinton did kind of rub their nose in it. Remember when he went to the Rose Garden?
He whipped their ass. But the thing is, it was never about removing him from office. It was just about trying to embarrass him. They were trying to set up the presidential election of 2000, and they wound up doing that, and that's part of how we got W.
And do you really think that Chief Justice Roberts is going to be able to stay up until 1 a.m, or have they poo-pooed that?
Well, I mean, they did change the schedule from 48 hours to 72.
But you know, he just wants to crow. Trump just wants to crow. That's what he's living for.
Sure.
Yep. As my friend Scott would say, we're totally screwed.
We're all screwed, Bob.
But you know,
I've gotten to where I do a pretty good. I do a pretty good Scott from San Diego.
Yeah, you do. But I've also heard that, you know, it may not be as cakewalk as they think it's going to be. And that's where we come into play. Even if you have a Republican, even more importantly, if you have a Republican Senate, light them phones up, man. They work for us.
Yeah, and, well, sure. And there are some, there's some calculus involved. I mean, if Joni Ernst and Martha McSally think that there's, if they get enough pushback in their own districts and they think it's Republicans who are pushing back, then maybe they change an iota. But there's not, I mean, that's not, that's certainly nothing I would take my last $5 bill into a betting parlor on.
No, and Susan Collins, forget about that. You know, how many times has she let us down in the last 3 years?
Well, she's never let me down because I never believe her. She's a born liar. I mean, it's her shtick. It's like, it's like a professional wrestler who comes on with a red, white, and blue American flag mask with a star over one eye. You know, you always know who that wrestler is. And this is that. She's the person who always hems and haws and says, oh my, I'm so disturbed. I'm very disappointed. Goodness me, whatever shall we do? And then votes and does whatever Trump wants her to fucking do. It's who she is.
That's who she is. Exactly. So, well, I try to be the eternal optimist, but I don't have it in me, man. I just don't have it in me, Brother Bob. And the vibe I'm getting off of you is, you know, there's not a whole lot of optimism floating around in your head either.
Well, I mean, it's this is grim. This is painful. This is sad and sorry. We are watching the demise of the American Republic. And, you know, just because after this sham of a trial is over, the sun keeps coming up, doesn't mean that everything's okay here and that we're all good again. It doesn't mean that.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, you have a republic if you can keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that we may have screwed the pooch on this one. Hopefully not. I hope I'm wrong. Gosh, man.
I would not bet against you. I don't think you are.
Last I heard, you know, as far as polls go, but who knows, that 69% of the American people. It's my Mitch McConnell imitation. 69% want a fair trial.
Yeah.
But he doesn't care. All he's worried about is keeping his old lady from... No, I shouldn't say that. His wife from getting fired. I think that plays a lot into it. I mean, this is the most crooked bastards. I've been following politics ever since the Nixon administration, and these are the most crooked bastards I've ever had the displeasure of following.
But in this case, Steve, it's not just that they're crooked, it's that they're not even good at it. If any of these miserable, misbegotten, godforsaken Republican senators gave a tinker's damn about their oath to the Constitution, he'd be out on his ear. And it would still be okay because, you know, they keep talking this goofy shit about, well, they're trying to overturn the results of an election. Well, actually, no, the Electoral College did that, one.
Right.
And two, even if we remove Nitwit Nero, you still get Mike Pence. Do the maggots hate Mike Pence that much?
Evidently. And it's just, to me, the whole damn thing is just heartbreaking. But you got to keep the faith. What other choice do you have? I'm not moving. I don't have the resources.
Where do you go? Where do you go? I mean, hell,
where the fuck are you going to go, right?
I mean, how crazy is it? I wish I had the wherewithal just to say screw it,
right?
And move Agnes and Ferg down here, and we could, you know, and warm weather will come. See, that's the difference between where I live and where I am right now. There's about 3 degrees of difference between the two places, okay? 3 degrees and a couple of inches of snow. But here's where it breaks. In about 30 days, it's going to stop being so godforsaken cold here, and winter will go on for another 30 up there.
You're exactly right, Frank.
And in another 30 days after that, temps will be in the 80s here.
The weather's just gone completely mad. But I didn't call it to do a Steve Bob. What do you call it?
A Steve-a-Bobster?
Steve-a-Bobster.
No, you're not. We're talking, man. It's only a filibuster. Yeah. If only one person's doing all the talking, man. This is just conversation radio.
Yeah, I hear you, brother, but... I really enjoy listening to your other callers, so I'm going to make room for somebody else to get in.
Okie doke. Okie doke. That would be all fantastic. Right. I mean, you know, but you don't have to hurry away. You never do. I never run anybody off the air.
I know, man. And you're a good friend. And hopefully this will work out for us, you know.
Yeah. And when I get home, we'll go to work on the, we'll get to work on the horn in. And I hope you and Miss Karen can come up.
Yeah, we are planning on it. You know, if I had my druthers and I would hit one of those crazy lotteries where I could just move the whole Horn family out of state, you know, to Costa Rica or somewhere.
I don't speak the language.
Well, we'll get one of those.
You know, I'm good for Donde Esta La Cerveza, and after that, nothing.
What's that recording thing called where it teaches you language?
Babel or something?
Yeah, I'll throw that
Rosetta Stone or, yeah.
Because we're too good of people to have to put up with this nonsense, you know? And it's wearing me down, brother. It's wearing me down.
Well, you're not the only one. And I think it's fair to talk about it. It's taking a toll on all of us. Like I said, it's not easy to sit and watch something die. Or someone you love, or something you love.
It's something that you believed in, and something that your forefathers fought and died to deliver it, you know, this to us. And that's all I got. That's all I got for right now. And
okay, bro.
I'll be in touch, bro. And I'm really proud of you for your stage production. Somebody sent me some text. I need to get there over there and check it out.
Okay, yeah, do that. I didn't know about that, but that's cool. And
well, I could scrub it, and I'm not going to share it.
Just don't, because
no.
Yeah.
I know. I know all about copyright. I was in the music business for a long time, Bob. I know.
Oh, I know you.
I
know you were.
How nasty the entertainment business could be, you know. So, I will let you get back to what you do best, my friend, and know that I love you guys and all the Horn family. And if there's any way out of this, we'll make it happen.
All right, we love you too, brother. And right. Hey, I can happily announce that Darlene in Connecticut just sent along a note, said $100 challenge then from a hardcore member of the Society of Leans and Reverse Oreo Cookie Society, Reverse Oreo Cookie Society, to honor Tracy, Queen of the Best One-Liners on your show. So there's a $100 challenge on the table. If that gets met, we'll knock down $200 of the $450 that we've got staring us in the eye.
Darlene's so cool. Everybody on the Horn
is
cool.
Yeah, no, this whole community is so special.
And please know, and I'm not patronizing. I missed you when you were gone, man. I did. I was like lost.
What? You think I didn't?
It's like, time to listen to Bob. And a couple times I come back here and it's like, ah, damn, this is a pre-recorded show.
Well, I'm sorry. Damn, it just works out that way.
Right, man.
Yep.
But I'll be in touch, my friend.
All right. And, you know, I'm here for the remainder of the week. And then that way.
Perfect.
That way I get home and whatever crisis is in the studio, we'll get that sorted out on Sunday and we won't miss a stitch. And we'll be back for more on Monday a week from yesterday.
Perfect. Perfect. Because we got another, what, half a week left? I'm looking at the calendar.
Well, we got Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then a full 5 days next week.
Yeah, we got this, brother. We got this.
All right, man.
All right. Take care, Bob.
Later, Steve.
All right.
That's our buddy Steve calling from Georgistan. All right. Okay, so we're clear there. Lines are open. Skype line's open. So is the stress line, 844-843-847. 844-843-4676. There's a $100 challenge on the table, and we've got about an hour and 8 minutes in which to hopefully meet it. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so very, very much. And you know what? We're in the new year, and I don't think I've run one yet. Oh, wait. Here we go. We're on our way. Ralps has jumped in. Thank you, Ralps. Has jumped in on the challenge. So there's $90 left there. Thank you, Ralps. Okay, this is something that's going to have to be fixed. But that's another thing I'll get to at some point. I'll have to sort that out, Lady B. What? What's all this about? The UK declaring that the trident symbol on the Ukraine flag is a terrorist symbol? This is outright Machiavellian. Is it just me? What the fuck are they trying to do? Encourage Russia to continue its illegal presence in Ukraine? Convince the world that war in the Baltic state, oh, in the Middle East is justified and necessary? Or were this easily duped? Have I gone through the looking glass? God, Lady B, nothing is as it seems. Nothing. But I'll have to look into that and see if I can make any sense out of it. Okay, let's pop over and check in for a minute with Erwin. Hey, Erwin.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you? Been a while.
Well, I'm doing pretty well. A little depressed about what's going on with the Senate, but
I don't know if I would say depressed. I'm more like disgusted.
Yeah, I guess that's
more this ought not be so damn difficult.
Right. Yeah. I know you've said in the past that impeachment is a political process. Do you think it would be better if it wasn't? If somehow it could be formalized into some other system where
Well, I don't know. I don't know what other system you could have, because we have seen, for instance, Brazil went upside down because of you wind up with Jair Bolsonaro because their president was removed on, I hate to use the term now, trumped up charges. I mean, it is not this system's fault. It is the fault of people who don't know how it works. That's what I was talking about early in the program when I said this entire process is exposing the degree to which people in this country don't know how the government works. And when I say people in this country, again, not just those of us out here not in government, but there's a bunch of people inside government who don't know how government works. Or, right, if you want to be a little bit more cynical about it, Republicans know how this process is supposed to work. They simply refuse to use it on one of their own.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's just like you said, it's, you know, everything's fine if it's a Republican. You can do whatever you want. And they all stick up with each other, for each other, you know. Solzhenitsyn or whatever the Russian guy said, that the evil people stick together, and that's where most of their power comes from. Is I don't know if I'd call all Republicans evil, but that's crossed my mind a few times, that they all stick together, for each other when they're, you know, doing their dirty deeds and whatnot. So, but that's just my opinion, I guess.
No, I don't think it's, I mean, it's opinion, but I don't necessarily think it's a wrong one. We're getting a shit ton of empirical proof that it's in fact correct.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I guess in some of the people I've grown up with that are, you know, they're still supporting Trump. I just, it's just beyond my belief that.
Well, what you're finding out about him is that they actually didn't know much about being an American.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I've come to that conclusion. And,
I mean, it's kind of a giveaway, Irwin, when they say, well, you know, it's right, the Second Amendment's right there. It's right there in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's right there in when Jesus delivers the sermon on the mount at AR-15, and it's mounted on your pickup truck.
Yeah.
Them framers didn't just come up with it. They's Bible readers, and they knowed it was in there.
Yeah. Yeah, we're just talking about ignorant people, I guess, and but then again, there's some people that are actually educated, that, you know, I have a friend, you know, she's liberal and she's married to a Trump supporter. He's educated, you know, and everything. And he's just obsessed by Trump, I guess. And, you know, I can't see how she can stay married to myself, you know. Just, you know, he just drives her nuts. But it's just a mystery to me how that thinking process can go that way. It's just, I don't know. It just baffles me. I don't know. But maybe I baffle them just as much. So.
Oh, I rather doubt it. You know, it's the difference between an approach to the Constitution that is based on the Constitution and common sense versus an approach to the Constitution that is transactional. And by transaction, you know, where you only follow the dictates of the Constitution if it is somehow politically advantageous to you. If you want the ultimate analogy in terms of transactional processes, is, you know, strip joint.
Right.
She comes over, or he comes over, and dances in front of you, and as part of that transaction, you put the dollar bill in the garter, or in the bikini, or posing pouch, or whatever, and everybody's happy. That's a transactional process. Right. Nobody's in love with anybody.
Right.
It's and you can see it in media. When people will pretend that some guest with a book to hawk is somehow their, you know, oh yeah, we're buddies. We were down at the bar last night. No, you're here to hustle a buck, hustle a book, and we're here to, you know, have people tune you in because they want to see you hustle the book.
Right.
And the same thing applies in what we're witnessing here.
Yeah. Speaking of books and, Bolton, that guy disgusts me. I mean, you know, he's willing to testify if he can make a few bucks on it, you know, just, oh God, these people. Are
yeah. And look, I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from them. These are interesting stories, but this new book that's out that everybody's talking about, everybody's writing about, it happens every time there's a new book about Trump. In this case, it's a pair of reporters from the Washington Post, and they very carefully sourced their book. They didn't make any shit up. You know that something's true when it comes out, Nitwit Nero says, it's a pack of lies. It can't be believed. They're scumbags for writing it. Okay. Then that's how you know it's true. Right. And I guess there is historical or perhaps news value in these stories of just how stupid he is. I mean, one of the things in there has to do with a trip that he was taking on, a tour of the Pearl Harbor Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at General John Kelly, because that's back when he was there, and he says, so what is this place?
Jesus.
I mean, I've heard of like Pearl Harbor, but like what happened?
Oh,
and you know it's true.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
And see, so the larger point of what I was getting at is great, but that means that they held on to that information for however long it took to put it in a book, prepare the book, do the proofs, do the galleys, get it printed, get it to the stores. And they held on to that information.
Right.
Because capitalism.
Yeah.
They wanted to make a buck on it. Yeah. Instead of running out of the newsroom screaming, oh my God, Donald Trump doesn't know what happened at fucking Pearl Harbor, they waited and they put it in a book that they could sell for $31.95.
Yeah.
Or however much it costs.
Right. But they both have a Pulitzer prizes that I read, that they're still using the system and making
it. And Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, Irwin, you're not alone. I think the GOP's evil too.
Oh, okay. Good. Because I have members in my family, so I, you know.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Lee in New York says, Second Amendment in the Bible. Hi, Bob. Stop it, Bob. The Bible is perfect, just like the phone call. It has not and never will be amended, just like the Old Testament.
Yeah.
I know.
But I know what do you think's going to happen, really? I know from your dialogue earlier, you're talking about the end of the Republic and you know, it's just...
Well, like I said, it's not like we're going to close up shop and stop being the United States. It's just that we will have finally put paid to any notions that this is anything other than an empire that is largely run by an imperial administrator. And when the imperial administrator is of the same party, is a Republican, and the Congress is full of Republicans, or one house is ruled by Republicans, they will do whatever the imperial administrator wants.
Right.
And he, in turn, or she, can do whatever they want. And you know, the Republicans won't do anything about it. Now, on the other hand, Benghazi, we're going to investigate this forever. Whitewater, Jesus, it was a failed Arkansas land transaction that over the course of years and through the connivance and finagling of a dirty Republican judge and a couple of dirty prosecutors turned into a story of a cum stain on a blue dress.
Yeah.
I mean, just let that sink in.
Yeah, I know it was. And I remember being lectured many times by Republicans about how terrible that was.
My favorite phrase out of the Clinton impeachment was, "My friends, the flag is falling."
Rush Limbaugh. Yeah. Oh, jeez. But you know that, what's his name, Dermash or whatever, saying that he's more afraid of Bill Barr than he is the Russian and Ukrainian mafia. That's quite a statement. I just, it's almost too much to believe, but Pertash, or whatever his name is, said that in one of the interviews. But what are your thoughts about? And Bill Barr made a trip to here, to Western Montana, not too long ago, and gave me the creeps that he was in the state. And I'm just wondering what he was up to. So I wondered what you're thinking about Bill Barr is.
Well, I love the fact that Lev Parnas's attorney called for him to recuse himself from the prosecution of Lev Parnas. That should be a slam dunk. But again, who's going to make him do it?
Yeah.
What I said long ago remains true. We are finding out every last flaw, every last bug in our constitutional system, and every last one of them is in turn being exploited by these Republicans.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse because, as David in South Carolina Stan points out, the GOP controls the courts, and look at the number of not qualified judges that McConnell has forced onto the federal bench, where they will enjoy tenure forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if those judges, are they across the country or in one location, or do you really know? Or are they?
Oh, no, they're all over the country. They're all over the country.
Shit. Yeah. So they're... He's put some, like, maybe even in a blue state like.
Oh, California. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway. Well, I suppose I better get off if somebody else wants to talk for a while. It's been a while since I talked. And
I'm glad you called in.
Yeah. So. Keep up the good work. I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
All right. Going to try. You stay warm, Irwin. Later, man.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
That's our buddy, Irwin. And now we will take it over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Robert, hello. Welcome back. I love you.
Hey, Rudy, what's
up,
man?
Thank you so much. Have you seen YouTube? It's, okay, here it is. It's, not, damn it. Everyone's got to go see this. It's fucking bitching. Elmo, not the real Elmo.
Take a breath. It's fine. Oh, you're good.
Not real Elmo impeachment song. You got to see this. It's fucking great.
Wait, okay.
Not real Elmo impeachment song.
All right, I'm looking. Hold on.
It is fucking great.
Should I go to YouTube for it or what?
Okay. Okay. This is easy. Go to KTOX1340.com.
I'm at YouTube.
Go to YouTube. Go to, just put it in Google. It's going to be a quicker state of shock. KTOX1340.com.
Okay, you're going too fast. K what?
KTOX1340.com. Yeah. That's the asshole radio station that's right here near the maggot.
Yeah.
You go to the page on the title, say chat, click on the chat, and there it is on the chat page. Near the bottom. All those are my posts, by the way. No one fucking.
I'm not seeing it, Rudy. Rudy.
I thought you just showed up. You're the, you scrolled up. It's like a third of the way from the bottom.
In that chat box? Oh, okay. There it is. There. All right.
Chat page. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hold on. Let's see if I can bring it up.
Narcissistic, racist president. He got impeached. Here's how. Sondland, ambassador to EU, Gordon Sondland. Swore they're all in the loop, Gordon Sondland. Pence and Pompeo to Mulvaney, Rudy and Perry Lindman. A decorated hero, Colonel Lindman. Witness the quid pro quo, Colonel Lindman. Like Hill, Taylor, and Holmes testified, exposing Trump's lies. Oh, boy! The aides approved, so yo, why call Ukraine? Kiev is desperate, so why call Ukraine?
Jesus.
Trump said Zelensky, here's your cash to enjoy. If you go after Joe and his boy, it's called extortion, yo, why call Ukraine?
Where do you find this stuff?
Miss Yovanovitch made the press happy when she testified to Congress. Biden, leading all of the polls, made Trump frightened. He got three amigos to help bribe him. So they lie about Joe, did not know the whistle would blow. Trump said, find a server to live and take Igor. Look all over Kiev and take with you. Ranking member Nunes, but no, they got clipped by the feds. Oh, boy. They hid the transcript. Yo, why call Ukraine? And now Lev has flipped. Why call Ukraine? The founding fathers knew, like an article too, that the briber must be removed.
Wow. I may never be okay again.
That is great, isn't it?
That's beautiful.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Isn't
that? And deep respect for anybody who can do that Elmo voice for that long.
Yeah, I found it on Twitter, and this morning it was gone. It said copyright, and I lucky I had this one, so. By the way, on that page you're on, those are all my posts. These fucking cowards, they won't even spar with me anymore. So I just claim the page. These are all maggots out here, but like I say, you know, I used to have decent conversations, you know, back and forth. Basically, they weren't decent. This guy was a fucking rapture fuck, you know, the.
No, oh, yeah.
God, yeah. You know, the, yeah, yeah, okay. But they just gave up. I mean, I just shamed them. I think, but some of those posts on there, Bob, I'm not a writer, like, I can't really write at all, but the ones that don't have quotes on them, I thought that shit up. So, it's kind of, you know. Okay, a couple more things. I can't understand mixed marriage, like, my wife, the person I love and that loves me, we got to be on the same fucking team. I don't understand someone being a Republican, the other one being a Democrat. I need some.
Yeah, I couldn't make that work. I don't think I could make that work.
Fuck. You need. It's got to be complete, you know. I mean, that's why you're with them. It's, you know.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Oh, go ahead.
No, you.
You were talking about Bolsonaro. You know, most Americans don't remember that. In 64, we kind of backed these fascists. Takeover of Brazil.
Yeah.
We backed a lot of fascist takeovers in South America, you know? Well, what's with us? But we did. I think they were fascist from 64 to like 80 or something like that. 84 maybe. And the Bolsonaro, he was in the fascist side when the fascists were there, you know? He's old school Nazi kind of thing. You know, Trump's buddy. Jeez. Remember, everybody, don't be so don't feel so bad because 16 got her ass kicked, 18 got back to house. At least we got a chance, and this is why.
Yeah, we do, and that goes back to me, saying all these months, dare to dream, and work to make the dream come true. I mean, you're in Arizona, Rudy. Rudy, you can get out and bust ass. And make sure that what's his name, Mike Kelly, becomes senator, and not that freak Martha McSally. The only way Republicans will ever learn not to do what they're doing now is for there to be a substantial punishment when they do it.
But don't forget, that was 16, 19, Kentucky, Virginia. Mississippi, Trump's stronghold, kick their ass.
Yeah.
Get one of them, right? He lost every election since he was in.
Well, it would be awesome out in Arizona if you could give if Arizona could give us one Democratic senator plus Kyrsten Sinema.
Bro, I'm relentless. I talk to every 20-year-old, 40-year-old, and I talk to them. Everyone I can, every time I'm out in public, are you registered? Do you think Trump is good? And I break it down to the simplest possible terms. If the country that you grew up in, that you loved when you were a kid, he wants to change it. And it's as simple as the Republicans want the wealthy to have more and us less and always be scraping. And the Democrats.
Well, you know, at the beginning of every month, Rudy, we have Bruce's Memorial Challenge, and it was Bruce who used to look at me and say, "Bob, the Republicans will not be happy until we're shivering in the dark and shitting in a bucket."
Ooh, I'm going to use that. But that's how I get everyone's attention. It's as simple as you really like. Why are these people that don't have shit? They like the wealthy having all everything because they want to be wealthy someday. You're not going to be wealthy. You know, you're not gonna. It's
ain't
it's,
gonna
it's,
happen.
I mean, they have what was it? You know, three people have more wealth than 170 million Americans, or something like that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They throw the money at the politicians that make the laws that benefit the wealthy. This is.
I know.
I'm passionate, Bob. I'm probably responsible myself. This cycle, you know, I've talked to at least 200 people. Pretty sure I touched a lot of them, and I'm not going to stop. You know, I got fucking 10 months. I do this every day, Bob. And when I run across a maggot, they're just so smug. They're just, you know what I mean? They're not only like ignorant, but they're smart ass about it. It just pisses me off. Oh, here's a quote from Isaac Asimov. There's a cult of ignorance in the United States, and there always has been. The strain of anti-intellectualism has been a constant thread winding its way through our political and cultural life, nurtured by the false notion that democracy means my ignorance is just as good as your knowledge. Beach.
Exactly.
It's on that page, Bob.
All right.
I love you, Bill. I'm going to let someone else get on.
All right. You take care, Rudy. Rudy.
You're going to watch Elmo again, aren't you?
Oh, of course I am. Absolutely.
Yeah, I watch it 10 times.
Later. Later now. Bye.
Bye.
Calling from Arizona, that's our buddy Rudy Rudy. And we have about 40 minutes left in the program. We've got $90 to go on Darlene's challenge, and it would go a long way toward not having a $650 fundraising hole tomorrow. It'd be nice if it was just $450 like it was today, but it would at least mean that we had knocked out the last $50 of last week and $150 of Monday. That's tremendous. So if you would like to double your money, Darlene is out there itching to do so. And go to the contribute page at headon.live and maybe help us keep this all going, because that's how it works. And by the way, earlier today, and this is nice, or at least it means that some people are paying attention. It takes a lot to get something trending on Twitter. But earlier today, hashtag GOP cover-up was trending all over Twitter. And that means that there are some people who are waking up enough to know that to know what's going on. And by the time all is said and done, you know, we're up in the 60s on people wanting a fair trial, wanting witnesses, wanting documents. But the maggot senators are still throwing themselves on their blunted swords. And here's hoping that we're willing to, you know, we're willing to let them do something besides be senator. Martha McSally in Arizona, Joni, the noted hogby baller Ernst in Iowa, Moscow Mitch in Kentucky, Precious Lindsay in South Carolina. Oh, mercy, Raul, bring me a margarita and a Darvon. I swear sometimes it's like the miracle worker around here. Oh. Yeah, that was for Flavio. Flavio wanted my Precious Lindsay and Raul thing. Yeah. Lady B says, dude, finding out our country is so politically correct. It's kind of like finding out the reason why your mom's chocolate chip cookies were so good is because she sprinkled a little bit of crack in it. Like you said, I can't believe this is happening during my lifetime. This is shit you should see in movies, not in real life. Our republic is falling apart. The sun will come up tomorrow, whatever her name is, but everything will be fundamentally different. Things with expansion. Civil rights will be harder to fight for. Social rights, such as wages, fair wages, and health care, it'll be harder to find more. Little things that might seem subtle on the surface, but hurt like hell underneath. That, exactly, exactly. Randy in PA asks, who the hell wants to bring on the end times? Doesn't it have involve like 7 years of a Mad Max world? Well, yeah, but only for the people who are unchurched and have it coming to them. The rest of them going to get caught up with Jesus in the clouds. Amen. Hallelujah. Glory. So both lines are open. If you want to get into the conversation, you are more than welcome. And by the way, I mentioned way, way, way back in the beginning of the program, I mentioned the word plague. Now, it's not plague, but we had a little piece of breaking news today. The United States has confirmed that our first case of the new respiratory virus from China has reached us. It's a U.S. resident who's in his 30s, who lives near Seattle. He's in good condition, hospitalized out of an abundance of precaution for short-term monitoring, not because there's any severe illness, okay? But that person, that guy has the new Wuhan virus, and it has killed a few people, and it's sickened a bunch more.
He had traveled from Wuhan to the United States, but he had not visited the seafood market that was thought to be at the very center of the outbreak. And he came into the U.S. on January 15th. That was 2 days before screening for the virus began here in this country. And, the CDC is now deploying screeners to two more airports in Chicago and Atlanta. They're already in L.A., New York, and San Francisco. And anyone coming from Wuhan will be vectored to those five airports previously mentioned. And I mentioned it to Agnes. I said, well, you know, there's only one case in Washington. Agnes answers back, being the nurse that she is, yeah, that we know of. And how long does it take? Right. It'll probably be all the way across the continent within a week or so. Who knows? David in South Carolina says, subject line virus. This replaced the Ebola scare. And there is a horde of people from Central America heading north across Mexico. Deja vu. Oh, no kidding. Yeah. And it's kind of like another thing that I have not mentioned. I'll go ahead. I don't know how to talk about things, but pardon my abundant paranoia. How did a story manage to break at the Hollywood Reporter and then bust out all over the country that showed Hillary Clinton doubling down on talking about how much she despises Bernie Sanders? Who's the editor who said, hey, that's a great one, run with it? Because apparently there's a documentary that's been shot now of her talking about how much she hates Bernie. And so she was re-interviewed by the Hollywood Reporter for it and doubled down and says, yep. And this is where it becomes troubling. I'm not sold on any Democratic nominee. I am sold on the idea of voting for whoever is the Democratic nominee, because no matter what shitty thing you can say about any individual Democrat, none of them are as bad as what is in the office now. And this country cannot stand four more years of Donald Trump. It may not. Some institutions may not survive this impeachment sham trial. Okay? And so on the day that the impeachment sham trial begins, lo and behold, it just so happens that the Hollywood Reporter breaks this story about Hillary talking shit on Bernie. I cannot begin to tell you how thoroughly I despise scab picking from 2016.
Oh, he pulled my scab. Oh, he pulled on her scab. Oh, there's stitches. God damn it.
A pox on their house at the Hollywood Reporter. Because you don't do something like the Hollywood Reporter just did. And, I had no idea there was an impeachment trial. So, oh, really? They're having primaries? And so even by, I was troubled by to even mention this, because it's, now I'm kind of tangentially participating in it. I'm not going to defend Hillary on this, and I'm not going to defend Bernie. I'm going to ask why this became a story at this moment. How does that happen? How does that work? Because my paranoid little mind won't let me just look at it and go, oh, that's an interesting coincidence.
Because it wasn't.
And so the The Hilarians, the 2016 Hilarians are all pissed off, and the 2016 and 2020 burnouts are all pissed off, and, you know, whatever. And meanwhile, the rest of the country is sitting here suffering under the fucking lash of Donald J. Trump while a pair of politicians work out their, you know, work out their angst. And it is just curious to me that that story broke, A, on the same day that the impeachment sham trial starts, but also when the, oh my God, they're having a spat. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie are fighting and feuding and, oh Jesus. That had begun to just die down a little bit, and then here it comes again. I liked Here You Come Again a lot better when Dolly Parton sang it. It's a bunch of bullshit. And it ain't no boating accident. The fella didn't know better. He'd almost swear he is being manipulated. Mm-hmm. You betcha. So a little bit of time left in the program. $90 more to go on the challenge from Darlene in Connecticut, with the sorority of in the name of the sorority of Leans and the Queen Tracy's Reverse Oreo Society. And let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, okay. Well, how you doing there, Mr. Bob?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
This is Kurt.
That's what I thought.
This is Kurt calling from up here in Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Yes, where you laugh at my 25 degrees.
Yes, well, I was just going to tell you, Bob, that we're at a balmy 20 degrees.
Well, hell, get out the Speedo and the tanning oil.
Well, there you go. Yes, and then we'll put on the old sun tanning oil and see if we can't get a tan from the reflection off the snow, you know.
Oh, hey, you know what? You can get a nasty little burn that way.
Oh, yes, you can. Yes. And it is bright. I mean, even in the wintertime here, I have to close my shades every once in a while because it's so bright out.
Yeah, that's for real.
And I've noticed too now since I've gotten older that oh my God, these bright lights, like if I'm out in my car and you got these cars that you're meeting with the halogen lights, it's like, Jesus.
Yeah, that's
what do you need all those lights on for?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then you get the hard cases that put the light bars all the way across the top so that everybody's blinded.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And then the fog lights, yeah. And then they're going too, you know.
Yeah.
But the reason I called, I was just going to ask you. Well, actually, there were just like several things here, but I was glad to hear that you went okay for your play.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
I did some plays when I was in high school. Yeah, right. Well, that was good. But I only have one question. Are you sort of a Stanislavski method actor, or are you a thespian, Bob, or are you like an old fashioned actor, like in the
Rome? I'm a learn my lines in the bathtub kind of guy.
Okay, right.
And you know, I'm a firm believer that Stanislavski, Boleslavski, None of that matters until, you know, you got to get all the words and then you got to get them all in the right order.
Right. And then you also have to kind of get into that emotion of it.
Oh yeah. No. I was taught by people who said that you have to tap into sense memory.
Right. Yes. I was too. I did a bunch of plays when I was in high school, and when I was at the Cripple Children's School, we used to put on like Christmas plays every year, and I loved it. I always loved, you know, the arts and all that too, just like you. And I love film, and Yes, yes, yes. No, I loved it all. But I, but the reason I called, though, Bob, was that I started to laugh when you were talking about what's his name with the headpiece.
The Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist.
Right.
And that thing on his head.
Right, and you were... Yes, yeah, there you go, there you go. And you were talking about the, you know, how many years humans will be on the Earth.
Jesus, he's a moron. God, he's fucking stupid.
Yeah, and well, what brought to mind to me about that, Bob, is that I've been sort of following... You remember the Viking probes that we...
Oh, yeah. What was
it? Late 70s?
Yeah, like, didn't it land on Mars on, in like, didn't it land on Mars on like July 4th, 1976 or something?
Or something, or maybe I'm thinking of the Voyager probes, you know, that are still going. You know, they're just entering now, Bob. They're just entering now interstellar space. And one of the scientists was saying, you know, they have maybe about 5 years left, Bob, you know, to kind of keep in contact with them. And then they'll just kind of go there.
Yeah, they'll just start floating through space until the aliens pick it up and turn it. Yeah, they'll float through space until the aliens pick it up and turn it into V'ger, and it'll come back and torment Captain Kirk. I mean, that was
the one scientist said.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that the one scientist was saying that they'll probably be out traveling because they're going to send one of them up in an upward trajectory, mm-hmm. and then the other one's going to go in a downward kind of a trajectory, Bob.
In three-dimensional
millions of years.
But hold on. In three-dimensional space, there's no such thing as up and down.
Well, no. No, that's true, too. But the one, you know, they say...
They'll be sent... Let's say they'll be sent upward. In opposite trajectories.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That probably
does that makes sense.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it does. Right. Right. But I find that fascinating. You know, as a kid, I remember when we landed on the moon and all this stuff, you know. And...
It was inspiring. That was back when America could do things.
Right, right.
That's back before we had a generation of a couple of generations of Republicans saying, "No, well, we can't do that. Go to the doctor when they're sick." Right. I mean, we sent somebody to the moon, but that's just too tough letting everybody go to the doctor when they're sick. Nancy.
Well, you know, one of the scientists though was saying that. That they'll be traveling, Bob, for like 300 million years. You know, they'll just keep on spinning or whatever they do, you know. And, you know, they'll outlive the Earth.
No, they won't outlive the Earth.
As far as time.
No. I don't know. I don't know if they will. I mean, that'd be a couple of billion years.
Right.
Well, just kind of bobbing along through space and beep, beep, beep.
Well, maybe he meant, you know, as far as like human existence on the Earth or whatever, you know. I mean, who knows? But I find time very, very fascinating. You know that, you know how everything evolves. You know.
Right.
Yeah. Did I lose you?
No, I'm right here. I'm right here.
Oh. Okay. But I find that really, really fascinating, the space and all that. But I just thought of that when you were talking about Rand Paul with the thing on his head, when you were talking about years, and all that, when he brought that up. So I just thought of that and I thought maybe you would like to know about the probes and stuff, because I know you're into space too. Yeah, right. But there was another thing, and this was during the interview with Rachel Maddow had with Lev Parnas or whatever his name is, and I kind of wish that she would have asked him this question. And that is he aware or does he know of any of the senators on the right side that are on the take from Russia? You know, I kind of would have liked to kind of hear if you.
Well, you can bet if that question wasn't asked, there's probably a good bet that the answer is no.
Right.
So that's where that is.
Yeah. Well, that's probably.
And
Randy
in PA said, Maven just recently landed on Mars with my haiku on it. What?
Oh, wow. Yes. Now that was, when was that shot up?
I don't remind.
Now that's supposed to be one of the newer probes or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I can't remember when that took off, but. But the Vikings or the Voyagers or, you know, those two probes were the ones, Bob, that took pictures of Saturn and Uranus, you know, when they
flew by. Yeah, I knew we'd
get
there sooner or later. Pictures of...
Yes.
you people.
And Saturn, you know, all those planets.
Yeah, see, okay, Lady B has the answer for us. Kirk, she says, Voyager, hold on. Voyager will drift off into space and then be found by a bunch of aliens who also happen to be capitalists. They will ship the job to a poor country on their planet. Then they'll rebuild it and ship it back, and it will be called Voyager with a J and stamped with a made in China.
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 Yeah, that's about right.
The amorphous multi-limbed aliens on Norblap 9 are taking
all
of our jobs.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, very good, Lady B. I agree. Yes. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Oh, it is. It is indeed.
Well, yes. Well, I'll let you go, Bob, but I thought...
All right, stay warm, you know.
It was nice to hear you back.
Oh, I'm tickled to death. I'm tickled to death to be back. Just, you know, be careful and get you some good sunglasses for that snow glare and take it easy on the neighbors when you decide to go out in the Speedo in that warm 20-degree North Dakota weather.
Well, not at my age, Bob. I don't think that would go very good.
It's not like it goes very well at mine either. So, you know, sometimes you just have to say, what the fuck?
Yeah.
All right, Kurt, you take care.
That's right. Okay. Okay, Bob, you take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's our buddy Kurt calling from North Dakota. A couple of emails. Albert says, Bob, I want to be around after the rapture happens. Plus, I want Jesus insists that all saved people have to obey all of the Ten Commandments all their lives. So we can ask the saved GOP Congress members, you didn't make it? There we go. Oh, and I have got to do something. It's just more gremlins. Wow. So this is awesome. Darlene's challenge has been met. Thank you to fellow founding member of the sorority of Leans, Charlene in Rogues Island. So that means, we knocked out, let's see, 440. We're down to $240. We could actually take a little bit more of a bite out of it between now and the end of the program, and that would be freaking awesome. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so very much. That takes a tremendous weight off my mind. Robert in Australia letting us know there's an excellent documentary on Voyager 2 and 1 called The Farthest. And P.S., there's no music by the Rolling Stones on the Voyager record. Darn it. Well, you can't have, you can't always get what you want. See what I did there? Okay, let's check in with Billable Rick. Hey, Billable Rick.
Hey, how's it going, Bob?
Man, you know, it's been a day.
Yeah, I've been kind of going back and forth.
I mean, how many different cuss words can you yell at a telescreen?
I think there's no limit to that, you know, the human imagination to devise cuss words, Bob, you know. one of my friends who I golf with will say "Hakuna Matata" when he hits a bad shot. from like the Lion King, I think, or whatever it was, you know. So, yeah, it's totally ridiculous, you know? And I saw this interesting piece in,
let me ask you just real quick. Yeah. Is it just me or, because I have said that the president's legal team is horrible, I would not want to leave them in charge of fighting a fucking parking ticket.
Yeah, no, they are horrible. I mean, they're clearly unprepared. They have no, argument really, other than that. Hey, they should have called, Bolton in front of the house, and that has been thoroughly rebutted by Schiff. You know,
yeah,
because he threatened a lawsuit against the house if they did.
No, but my favorite part was when Schiff said, "Cool, then we call John Bolton. We're ready for trial. Call John Bolton."
Mick Mulvaney.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just so proud of, that he is my representative in Congress. I mean, what a intellect he possesses, and just, he's just a damn good legislator and a damn good lawyer, you know?
Yeah. You get the sense that he is a good lawyer.
Yeah. And he's like head and shoulders above, the other side, way above the other side. I think some of the other Democrats did pretty good. I think Zoe Lofgren did okay, and I think Val Demings is really, she's really a great advocate, very, very, very good persuasive speaker,
Yes, she is. Val Demings looked him in the eye and said he's guilty and he knows it.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I saw this piece in Time magazine yesterday, which is titled "John Roberts Has More Power Than Mitch McConnell Would Like You to Think, But Will He Use It?" And this talks about Article One. It talks about how sparse the the impeachment procedures are in the Senate. I mean, it just gives the House the sole power of impeachment, and the Senate the sole power to trial impeachments. And that, when the president of the U.S. is tried, the chief justice shall preside.
Yeah.
And then, of course.
Yeah. That's an important distinction. And it's not just a lawyerly one, Rick.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they do in the Senate. He stays impeached.
That's true. He does stay impeached. The focus of this article, though, is the fact that, the chief justice shall preside. And, if you look at the Constitution, as a presiding trial officer, you have, the full ability to rule on matters involving, evidence and materiality, relevance, that type of thing. And so there's no, even though Senate Rule 7 allows a majority vote of the Senate to overrule any ruling by the Chief Justice. That rule conflicts with the Constitution and therefore is unconstitutional. So basically they say if Roberts had any guts, he would not be, afraid to overrule, majority votes by the Senate if he felt that, as the presiding officer, the trial should take a certain course, for example, So Rule 7 on impeachment, let me just read it briefly. It says that the presiding officer on the trial may rule on all questions of evidence, including but not limited to questions of relevancy, materiality and redundancy of evidence and incidental questions. But then later on, the rule basically takes away the ability of the presiding officer to make rulings by saying that the senators, by majority vote, can overrule the presiding officer as to those rulings. So, you know, I mean, if the guy had any guts and convictions, which I don't think he does, you know, he would not be afraid to say, hey, you know, there need to be some witnesses here. Hey, there needs to be some evidence here. And so far, you know, everything has gone down a party line vote, 53 to 47, as far as, you know, subpoenas for, you know, records from the president's office, you know, subpoenas for records from the State Department, subpoenas for records from the Office of Management and Budget. And now they're talking about, you know, I guess they're in recess now till for another 10 minutes or so.
Yes.
Mitch, I think, has to make sure he has his caucus together.
he's got the fix in. He has to make sure the fix stays in.
Yeah. And so now the amendments deal with issuing subpoenas to various witnesses, including, I imagine, John Bolton, Mick Mulvaney, and those folks. So this will drag on for like another, you know, this will probably go on till, you know, I'll be shooting pool by the time, actually, I will have finished pool by the time they're still going to be debating by the time I finish pool, which will be at probably, you know, 10:30 Pacific time.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is going to keep going on and on and on. But interestingly, Mitch had to kind of make some handwritten notations on his initial resolution, because initially he was going to give each side 12 hours to argue, and they were going to argue basically from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Right. And I think, you know, I think that was one place where some of his caucus kind of drew a line and said, I don't want to be here at 1 a.m. Goddamn.
Yeah, forget it. I'm going to be in bed.
Well, when a Republican says I'm going to be in bed, it doesn't necessarily mean what, you know, you and I think. Well,
it doesn't mean they're going to be asleep.
I mean, there could, there could, I mean, we're talking about Republicans. There could be goats involved.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, the fix is clearly in. I mean, you know, since when do you have a trial where you don't have any evidence? You know, you don't have either testimony or documents at the start of the trial. You only have it at the end if they decide, oh, we'll have some witnesses and evidence now. I mean.
Right. And what Schiff said was absolutely true. At the end of those 16 days, you don't get 16 more. You don't get 16 more minutes. You don't get 16 more seconds. It's over. It's too damn late.
Who said this?
Adam Schiff did.
Oh, Adam Schiff. Yeah. Yeah, it's too damn late. It's like, what have you been doing this whole time, you know? I mean, wouldn't you like to be a criminal defendant in a trial in the Senate? Okay, no witness is allowed against you. No documentary evidence against you. How the hell could there ever be a conviction under those circumstances?
Precisely.
You know what I'm saying? It's totally absurd. It's totally absurd. And I think, you know, I think the longer this goes on, I think the tougher it's going to get for the Republicans to keep the whitewash going. Because even I think Republicans, by a majority, maybe a bare majority, want to see witnesses and want to see, you know, documents subpoenaed. You know, and by a much larger margin, maybe 60% of the American people want to see, you know, records and witnesses. So, you know, we'll just have to see. We'll have to see what happens. I mean, I guess, you know, weird stuff can happen, Bob. You never know. You know, like you say, you know, if you thought today was weird, just wait till tomorrow and the next day and so on, you know?
Yep. Yesterday was weird. Today was weirder still. And tomorrow's going to be even more so.
You know, there has to be a moniker we can attach to that.
And it's going to be that for the next 364 days at the very least.
Yeah. I think we should call that Kincaid's Law. That's my motion. I move to call it Kincaid's Law.
Okay, we have a motion. We'll see if we get a second. and then we'll have 16. Then we'll have 16 hours of argument divided. No.
But hey, moving on to lighter subjects, Your play looked like a lot of fun. I saw some clips that Joe sent, Joe and his giraffe.
Yes, Giraffery. And,
Jeffrey, yeah. I actually Googled that and found out where it was playing, but I obviously am 20.
Yeah, you were a little too far away. I mean, nine-hour drive was pretty damn impressive as it stood.
That is impressive. That is impressive. Did you ever get a cowbell for showing up outside your dressing room?
Oh, hold on.
Yeah.
He has now.
Very good. Very good. So
thank you for the reminder. That badly needed to be done.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. I mean, boy, that's like, boy, the dedication that guy has, it's like amazing, you know? I mean, he comes out to California regularly and we hang out a little bit, you know, we've shot pool together and he's watched me play pool and what have you. You know, unfortunately, my pool tournament didn't go well on the 11th and 12th. The teams both lost, and I lost my matches, both of my matches. But on the bright side, I have individual MVP coming up on Sunday the 26th at 4 p.m. Up in Simi Valley. So I'm going to drive up there and see how it goes, you know.
Yeah, it's that's a terrible thing to say about a nice little valley like that it's Simi. I mean, you know, is it right next to Sleazy Hollow, you know, Simi Valley?
Yeah, exactly. Well, as you may know, that's Simi Valley was famous for letting off the officers for the hellish beating that they administered to Rodney King.
Yeah.
And that acquittal, those acquittals were, you know, directly resulted in the L.A. riots.
Yep.
So that's what Simi is known for, I think. You know, as the community that led off the bad officers against you know, the Rodney King meeting, you know. So I'm glad that did the play go off as you had hoped?
Did it exceed
your wildest expectations as far as how it turned out?
It was fantastic.
That's awesome.
We got lots of good responses, you know.
I would have loved, but the thing is
with things like that, it's kind of like a bottle rocket, you know. You light it, it goes up, it explodes, it makes boom, you know, and then it's just gone. It's over.
Well, that isn't that the way life is, Bob? Right? That's kind of a metaphor for life, huh?
I suppose it is. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, very fitting. Very fitting. So, did you play the packed houses all four nights then?
No. It's hard to pack a house in January.
Oh, okay.
And nothing keeps crowds away like rain.
Rain and then being sick, flus and stuff.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you heard me. I was sick for the first 2 weeks of January.
Oh, you sound you sound a little bit back more to yourself.
I think I have my karaoke voice back, Bob. I think I can finally do it this Wednesday for the first time in like a month, you know. So
I keep threatening to find somewhere doing karaoke, and I've decided that I'm going to be brave. I can't sing. I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but I want to essay Little Feat's "Fat Man in a Bathtub."
Oh, there you go.
Just because I think I can get close to Lowell George's voice.
Why not? Why not? Yeah. Yeah, you should give it a try, you know? What the hell? You only live once, Bob, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks for all the great stuff you've been doing, despite the fact that you were preparing for that play, and I can't wait to you know, to see more excerpts of it. I know that they have the Playhouse where you were at has like a pretty good Facebook site. And I think they have clips from past plays.
But we can't. No, I looked into all that. No can do.
Oh, you can't do that.
Mm-mm. No.
Aren't there clips from on that website though for those plays? So
I'm not sure. I mean, generally speaking, you can only do what you do. You know, you pay for the rights, and then.
Okay. So what is it? how expensive is it to pay for the rights to, let's say, Lyon and Winter, for example?
For that, it's all based on the size of the house, the length of the run.
Okay.
And I think the rights for that ran, like somewhere between $500 and $600.
Oh, for the whole show, for the whole stint,
for the whole run, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's actually one of my favorite movies, the adaptation of the play.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, mm-hmm. the movie is complete. I mean, you'll hear a lot of the same lines, but they're in mm-hmm. a different order.
Right.
And the script was different, and the there's even a difference between, like, you can order the script on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the same script that you're given you're sold the rights to perform.
Oh, okay.
Because the Amazon script is like the 1964 or whatever script. Okay. And the script we were working from was the 1966 script. Apparently Mr. Goldman continued to tinker with it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
For instance, in Act One, there's a moment when Henry says, "I've had the French King summoned. We'll state positions like two surgeons looking for a lump." That's in the 1964 script. In the 1966 script, the reference to looking for a lump is completely gone.
Okay. Okay. Hmm. Okay. Well, I sort of like the reference to the lump.
Well, I did too. There's another spot where he's talking with Eleanor and says something about, And this is in the 1964 script. He says, "Why don't you ask Praxiteles why he didn't work in butter?" Praxiteles being the great Greek sculptor of classical Athens.
Okay, right.
Well, by the time the 1966 script gets published, Praxiteles is gone.
Maybe that's a little too obscure of a reference.
Well, but I also think it has something to do with runtime.
Oh, shorten the stuff. Okay.
Yeah, because that thing can get real long real fast.
So your play took about, what, 2 hours, the performance, yeah. Or what?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was about 45 minutes for Act One and an hour for Act Two, and we added a 15-minute intermission.
So it's too bad the lovely Agnes could not have made it down just for at least one performance.
Oh, I would love to. I would love for her to have, but...
It's too much going on the home front, huh?
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's just too cold, and you got to keep the house warm, and
yeah,
that can't.
Need the cats, Bob.
The cat. It's all about the cats. You found a way, Rick. You found a way.
Steve mentioned it earlier. So.
Yeah, brother, it's good hearing from you, man. We will talk soon. Okay.
Sounds great, Bob. You take good care. All right.
All right, we'll do. See you, Rick. Later. Bye-bye. And we're a little bit over time, but, you know, I think I owe some overtime. Note coming in from Terry in Saigon, who isn't. I mean, he is Terry. He's just not in Saigon. I'm in a flea bag here on the side of I-75 here in Knoxville. I come home once a year for a few weeks. Watching and listening as an evening activity is so weird. You're an early morning phenomenon, usually, for me and my early students in Vietnam. It's all that old time when everyone is dying here. And they were such Christians. Mom's 94, too sick to go out. Our family's truly fractured due to Trump. I'm not welcoming, and I don't know if I'll ever come back. Tough times in a true shithole country. I've been sick for 3 weeks after arriving. This is the nasty place, Bob. Remember your story about the Aztecs? I'm sure it was the crystal grits that got me. Your opening comments struck with force. Well, I hope you get to feeling better, Terry, and safe travels. And it's never easy. Meanwhile, Elbert in Rhode Island says, if they allow witnesses, the Democrats need to stand up and say, okay, we call Donald J. Trump. Ooh, wouldn't they just have a conniption then? Because that is, of course, Mitch McConnell's wildest nightmare. Because even as it stands, you know, he's over in Davos, he's slurring and stammering, they can't get the dosage right, and Moscow Mitch is just terrified that Nitwit Nero will do something to ruin his perfect plan to cover up this whole thing. And we have seconds on the motions from Tom in the Bay Area and from Randy in PA, so that will henceforward be Kincaid's law. However weird yesterday was, today will be weirder, and no matter how weird today is, tomorrow will be weirder still, and that law will remain in effect for at least 364 days. Tom adds, Simi Valley, we always called it Steamy Valley. Too hot if you've ever lived in a beach town. Thanks, Tom. And thanks for the second to you and Randy both. All right, so getting back into the swing of things, 2 days back. And thanks to Darlene for the challenge. And thanks to Ralphs and Charlene for responding to it. We'll be at 4:40 tomorrow evening. I guess that's like Sparky's favorite voltage or something. So maybe if you're on the overnight crew with the podcast, or help out if you'd like. And thanks go out, of course, always to our subscribers and to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air day to day, week to week, and month to month, and year to year. We're closer to our second decade of broadcasting now than we are to our first. How about that? And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks for popping by on Facebook. Thanks for listening on all the various streams. Thanks for podcasting. Thank you. I recognize that you are sharing part of your precious finite life, and it is an immense honor. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.